What's going on, everybody? How you doing? Welcome back once again. This is What You Scared to Say podcast, episode 38, A Voice for the Youth. Guys, what I need everybody to do right now before we introduce our newest guest is I need everybody to like, subscribe, and share. And so right now, I will go to my left and introduce. I want to say hello to the people, introduce your name and a
little bit. Yeah. Hi, everyone. My name is Salma Bashirovic. Thank you so much for having me on here.
Welcome.
I'm a first-generation American, born in 2000. My parents came here a few months earlier than that, of my birthday, to this country. I'm a proud Bosnian American. I live in Delaware County, Pennsylvania. I lived all over the East Coast, from Northeast Florida, Central New York, and grew up surprisingly Democrat. But here I am, a conservative woman in today's age. More excited and engaged than ever to lead the way forward.
That's fire. I'm excited to have you. And so for everybody who don't know, I met Salma here at a town hall, the Keystone Town Hall we did in Philadelphia. We did it this past Thursday, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so we were talking and having this engaging conversation. And I seen so much and heard so much passion from you when you spoke up about things that were bothering you or things that you've seen and, you know, you just wanting to be more involved. And it's an emotional time for a lot of people in the country right now. And we'll touch on some of those things. And so I'm like, I got to have this person on a podcast. Like, I got to get her because, like, you know, we need more of that. And so it was very genuine. It was very passionate. And I just seen nothing but talent just bouncing all over you. Right. And you spoke from the heart. And so I just want to say that to you and let you know that. And so, all right, this is what it brings me to. Right now in the country, it's like I said, I just mentioned a few seconds ago, it's a lot of tough times right now. And because we lost somebody, we lost Charlie Kirk, and it felt like we lost a brother, we lost a family member, right? And so I was speaking about a little bit about this with the last episode I just did a few minutes ago with Senator Dawn Kiefer, and I spoke a little bit about how I felt, but right now we're going to unpack this, Salma. We're going to talk about this, and we're going to talk about some other things too. And so, like, I want to get your opinion. I want to know, what did this loss mean to you? How did you view things? And a lot of the times we are talking online and we're, you know, but you can't really get the feel of a person. I seen a couple of your stats about Charlie, but if you wanted to take this time to express, you know, whatever it made you feel, how you see the country right now, this is a great opportunity to do that. So could you please share with us?
Of course. First and foremost, thank you for your kind words and compliments. At that town hall, you spoke to me in a demeanor that I wish we could all speak to each other. And you said to me, I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. Mm-hmm. And I truly appreciate that. I appreciate the recognition. In regards to Charlie Kirk, I have shared about how I was a big fan of his content. To clarify, I didn't agree with everything he said. Mm-hmm. But people oftentimes forget that you are never going to have 100% unanimous support behind someone. That's the great thing about this country. You can majorly agree with them and support them, but you don't have to agree with everything. And that was Charlie Kirk to me. I'm 24. He was 31. A few years older, he started his Turning Point USA organization. It around my age, he was an entrepreneur. As someone like myself, I live to debate. I love arguing. I'm an adamant believer that if you cannot defend what you stand for 100%, then you are just a sheep, regardless of what side of the political aisle you are. Do your research, do your objective research, and find the basis and facts for your beliefs. And that's what I did growing up. Growing up, I was Democrat. Through college, my party shifted, and I didn't find Charlie Kirk's content until after I had already switched my party. And he just really emphasized discourse. And that's what I feel, he's lost a sense of humanity in his passing. The left have demonized him, saying he was inciting violence. Well, if he's inciting violence, then what was January 6th if y'all are saying this? Your double standards don't make sense. A man coming to college campuses to ask questions, he openly wished for people who disagree with him to come forward. I went to Westchester University when Vivek Ramaswamy came. Charlie Cook, Kirk couldn't make it, unfortunately, but they openly said, give us people who disagree with us to ask us questions. Let's get this engagement started. And that's all his message was. He had his personal biases and beliefs. Of course, we all do. But his passion, his mission behind his project of Turning Point was to engage voters, though he had some sway in his opinion. Of course, why wouldn't you? If you're your own boss, you're going to speak your mind no matter what. And with his loss, I mourned. I cried. I didn't expect to cry, but it was hard. A man that I watched adamantly almost every day, enjoyed him going on other collaborations like Jubilee. He went to Oxford to debate English students. He lived the First Amendment, and that was beautiful. And I only hope to be half the person that Charlie Kirk was.
Right. That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. I feel the same way. Like a lot, I mentioned in a previous episode, you know, that a lot of people are asking, well, who's going to be next? And like, who's going to step up and take that mantle? And it's like, I don't think it's just going to be one person. I think it's going to take all of us to be inspired and do our part. And, you know, naturally, if somebody has the talent, the education, the God's calling to, and it, you know, naturally that person will come. But until then, everybody just do their part, right? Mm-hmm. And so you spoke a little bit about just now, you was hinting at, not even really hinting at, but you kind of said it, but it was like emotional intelligence. And that's what a lot of people lack right now, right?
Yes.
And so even where we're talking about civil discourse or people just disagree with you, they're not in it to, and when I say they, I'm talking about the radical left, right? They're not in it to have meaningful conversations. Like they want us to comply or just fall in line. It doesn't, you have to do this. I don't care what you're saying. They'll hit you with 1,000 memes on Facebook, or they'll, you know, they'll throw something at you. They'll cuss at you. All of this violent stuff. People say it's both sides. No, it's not both sides. Mm-hmm. I'm not letting people get away with that. Mm-hmm. People are saying that the country is 50-50. It's not 50-50. It's more so you have about 35% of the country who is extremely loud, extremely radical. They just have the loudest voice. But the majority of the country, they have emotional intelligence, right? But that's not who the left are pushing. Their party has become extremely, extremely violent. And so when we're being called names, right, I want to ask you this. And so it doesn't hit home until you see people saying these things, right? So I want to ask you this. How, if you've ever been called names for your beliefs, like fascists, like we're seeing what they're doing, if you've been called things like this, share some of that. And like, when you hear that, how does that make you feel?
So I switched parties, like I said before, in college. So I was on the end of my peers, my close friends, calling people who disagreed with us those words. I came to light, and after I switched parties, I became a lot more quiet about my beliefs because I saw the hate that my neighbors, my constituents, my brothers and sisters were receiving in my community for being conservative.
Okay.
So when I switched my party and realized that what the left was pandering and painting was so untrue, I decided I'll let God do his work. I believe God reveals all. I'm an adamant believer in that. And I know that as his disciple, that he'll use me for his work and his good. I'm just going to be quiet and observe. I'll let the hate do its thing. And to the people who I have friends that I grew up with, who were cursing out Charlie Kirk on my Facebook timeline, you know, I don't give an F, I'm glad he's dead, and this and that. And people were comparing him to Epstein. And I'm like, oh my goodness gracious, where's the critical thinking here?
Right.
It's ridiculous, but I don't go out of my way to meet vile and vicious tongue with vile and vicious tongue.
Okay.
I do grace. I give you the space to learn because I was also in that space. You think these vile, vicious thoughts, why? What was fed to you? Oh, he's this, he's sexist, racist, homophobic, this and that. Watch his content uncut. Don't do what the mass media does and watch the hot clips and the trigger words and the clickbait and say, oh, well, this must be true. Do your research. I studied political theories and community relations in my undergrad, and I loved it because I understood people. I was taught that Cubans primarily vote Republican because of the country they came from and the communism they experienced. But then you have the left that pander to the Hispanic society as a whole, and it's say, well, because we're this and Trump hates this, X, Y, and Z. Well, that doesn't make sense logistically if we're looking at it from an equation standpoint. You know, I look at things logically. Let's apply them here. And when people call conservatives fascists, well, first of all, genius, it's not left to right. There's also an up and down. There's authoritarianism and libertarianism. And I'll promise you that most people who lean right also lean towards libertarianism. I lean right personally because I want the government less involved in my paycheck. The left, the that exclaim that they're trying to help the same people that they're hurting. You want to help a first-generation American? Stop taxing me out the wazoo and let me keep my hard-earned dollar in my account and do what I want with it. You change charity from a community-involved engagement to a government-backed agency. That's where the fall is in this village. We can't have a village if all we're doing is deflecting to the government to control every sense of genuineness, of charity, of community that we have.
That was an amazing response right there, right? And so you wouldn't believe when 2024, just to add to what you just were saying, right? 2024, when I was going around to different rallies and things like that, people that was coming from other countries, whether it be China, Russia, whatever, they were saying to us, listen, do not let them take over this country. We just came from a communist country. These are people, they're telling us that whole socialism thing don't work. That whole Marxism don't work. These are people coming from, and this is what they're trying to implement in this country right now. And so I want to ask you this, right? You hinted about some people that was in your timeline, people that were friends of yours or whatever. When you came out and you switched to this side and clearly you voted for President Trump. Mm-hmm. When you came out, you started to become more vocal and more active in politics. Did you lose friends? Did you lose family? If so, could you explain some of that?
Of course. I did not lose any friends and family. Okay. My circle, not everyone is involved in politics. And that's the truth. There's 8 billion people in this world.
Right.
You might think politics is the epitome of life or death, but to some it's just a day in November every 4 years. Right. And that's unfortunately true. Most Americans aren't engaged. And the best way to change that is to be a summary of what's going on and relate to your friends. Here's all this information. I'm going to relate it to you objectively, ideally, and have you come to your own senses and make your own decision. On social media, if I lost anyone, good riddance. I don't think of you as a friend. If you can't tolerate my point of view or have a heavy conversation, go argue with your mother. It's not up to me.
For sure. That's amazing. Okay. All right, yeah, me, so because where I come, I'm Philadelphia, I'm a Black American, we're taught to, just to share a little bit, like, we're taught to just fall in line, to be automatic Democrat, can't even think about it, don't matter what the policies is, we voting strictly off of skin color. So when I challenge these beliefs, I'm like, okay, I started looking at in 2020, the summer 20. People got their different time periods when life clicks for them, right? And me, it was around the summer of 2020. I'm like, what type of man I want to be? Like, where I want to go in life, right? Why I'm not getting those things? All right, what do I need to do to work on myself? I start listening to different people who was influencers, right? So now I'm looking at, okay, I'm controlling my algorithms. I'm looking at Candace Owens.
Oh, I love her. Love Candace.
She's getting a lot of heat right now. Maybe we might get to touch on her. Maybe, you know, we'll see what happens. And so I'm listening to Candace Owens and I'm like, okay, I like the conservative values, what she's talking about. Now I'm looking at other men. I'm listening to a David Goggins. I'm listening to an Andrew Tate, even though he gets a lot of heat too. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, dang, I need to train more. I need to eat better. I need more money. I need to stop wasting time. I'm spending too much idle time. And so like I started to become driven. And so like now I'm not missing gym sessions. Now I'm not missing like, you know, any important meals. Like I'm just dedicated to purpose, to being the best possible version I can be of myself, right? It's me versus me. And you know, what type of dedication that was going to take. And I had to implement that. And so politically, I'm like, okay, now I'm looking at the world different about, you know, instead of accepting handouts or looking for government to be in my life, I'm like, no, I need less of this. It's too much regulation. It's too much red tape. It's like, it's just too much. Like, I need to be free. I need to be able to do this when I need to be able to do it. I have ideas. I don't need you in my wallet. I don't need you dictating things to me. So I said, all right, so they're telling me these people are racist over here, right? It's the big thing in my community where I come from. I said, well, they're just telling me this. How do I know this, right? Like, no. I went to my first Trump rally in the summer of 2024. He came to the Leah Core Center. He came in Philadelphia where they say he cannot win, right? Okay, I was taught that during my crash course of politics that you don't need to win Philadelphia, but you just need to lose by a lot. You need to do better than when any other Republican ever did, right? And he said, I'm coming there anyway. I don't care if I can't win it. And it was proof. He got the highest percentage of the Black American male to vote for him in Philadelphia than the rest of the country. He got 26% because he was speaking about the issues and he had policy to back that up. He said no tax on overtime, no tax on tips and things like that. And we were attacked as men in the last, it's been an attack in the last let's say 10 years, right? Feminizing men, making men feel bad for being masculine, mm-hmm. taking men out of the home, you know, trying to say it's okay to not provide or protect for women, things like that. And you got all the, and this is why we got all these shootings right now, because men acting out of emotion. So when I'm listening to it, Andrew Tate, I'm listening, and I'm a segue it to you and how it makes sense, right? And so, like, I'm listening to these men on, it's okay to have emotions, but you just need to learn how to control them. Mm-hmm. And so I went to my first Trump rally, and I'm listening, I'm like, MAGA. That's not what these people just was telling me on CNN and MSNBC. This is not what these people are awesome. Like, they were talking to me like they knew me their whole entire life. And I'm like, oh, this is BS, right? And so now, like, I'm fully on this side. I got to tell the whole world about this. I was like, this is what my purpose has been. So I've been doing it through podcasting. So I've been trying to be, to try to bring it to you, right? I've been trying to be a living example of how you could be a man of God, how you can be in shape, how you can be driven, how you don't have to fall to the hedonisms of life. You know, these things are short, temporary dopamine shots of, I need to party, I need to be chasing all these different women. No, the nuclear family is cool. Being a man of God is cool, right? And so I've been trying to show people in real time, this is what it looks like. I'm not the billionaire sitting on this perch telling you how to get here. I'm going through this transition in real time. So I've been having different guests come on, right? I've been having different demographics come on, different women come on. And so different men as well. And so, like, I want to show people something different, right? And so you're a conservative white woman, right? And so, like, I want you to explain, like, what does conservatism mean to you? What does it look like? How did you get here? You say you used to be Democrat. Mm-hmm. How did you make that transition? What does that look like? What did that look like for you?
That was a very pivotal moment in my life. Okay. I was involved with student government at my alma mater. And for those who don't know, at a university level, student government is nothing compared to high school.
Okay.
I ran as a transfer student. I went to UCF for 2 years, went to UNF afterwards during COVID, and I got involved at UCF. I saw what the student body president did there. He got electric scooters on campus, which, you know, isn't domestic politics by any means, but it's for a small body of constituents, and the constituents wanted that, and he got it. And I said, wow, a student did this. Right. I want to do that too. COVID happened. I thought my life was over. Transferred, and I realized the only person that's going to stop me from trying is myself. So let's try it. Day one of classes in the fall semester, I text this person who's chair of a political party who ends up being my opponent during the election. And I tell her flat out, I want to run for student body president. She says, we'll see about that. Spring comes, she ends up choosing herself. So I was the campaign manager, the CFO, CMO, any C-level executive name title. I was running my campaign. I was nosediving. I loved it. I love campaigning. A lot of blood, sweat, and tears. A lot of tears, a lot of contemplation. I spent $2,000 of my own money as a 21-year-old saying, you know, is this even worth it? I don't have any money in the bank account, but I'm spending it. And I'm spending all my days working until midnight and then doing homework thereafter. Yes. You know, is this worth it? I end up winning by 17 votes, and that number haunted me for a long time. And then one of my great advisors said, you didn't win by 17. You had a 571 vote count. All those people are still people who voted for you. Yeah, you won by 17, but those other people who got you to that 17 matter so much, and they wanted you. I will say I was nose to the grindstone. I made sure everyone who was campaigning for the party, for themselves, I had senatorial candidates involved. I put them to work. No breaks, no breathers.
That's fire.
Thank you. Yeah. And that's what a lot of politicians don't do now. They say, right, we need to do this, we need to do that. Hello, wake up. You're in that position to do these things. Why don't you say, I started something, I changed something, join me and let's push this bill forward. Let's lobby.
For sure.
And when in office, I realized that the Democratic Party wants to help everyone, but where do these funds come from? And working with the limited amount of funds at my university, I realized you can't help some and not help others. So let's just retract and help everyone at a baseline level. And that's where my view shifted in politics. Why don't we just help everyone at a baseline level? I shouldn't be paying for someone else's success. You should be helping yourself. I should not be helping you if you want to prosper. You have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You pursue it, not all of us for you. So that's where I changed my views.
That is amazing. And like, you're dropping gems right now. So thank you. I love it, right?
Appreciate it.
Yes. And so Okay. We talked a lot, right? We're bouncing around, but I'm trying to give people examples of what this look like, what the process looks like, because they see these things like, oh, how do I get to that? Like, how, you know, I tell people, like, you know, if I'm trying to lead, like, I have to live it. If you're trying to lead, you have to actually live it. Like, how did we get here? And so one of the things I want to ask you, right, is you're close with God. You have a personal relationship with the Lord, right? And so, like, people ask me all the time about, you know, my faith, and because they say, you know, you're on fire for God. And I look at that and I'm like, wow, like, I guess because I'm always making stats or tweeting about it. But and they ask me, was I always like this? And I'm like, I always had a relationship with God, but I wasn't living it. And so I'm going to share a little bit something with you right now, something with the audience. Some people know this about me, but I'm gaining new followers every day, right? And so, like, I always wasn't this stand-up person. I lived a whole different life. I've been to prison before, right? I've shared this before. And so it was during this time frame that I said, okay, God, I need grace. I know that I have to serve out this punishment for these 3.5 years that I have to spend in here, but I know I'm not going to get out of it, but I need grace to get through it. And so, like, I would read the New Testament frontwards to backwards till it made sense to me, right? And then, like, I'm like, okay, like, I'm understanding that I have to persevere, and I'm just reading certain things, and I'm like, it's sticking with me. And every day that I'm going out, and I got to stay physically fit, so I'm staying spiritually fit, I'm keeping my mind sharp. And, like, every day I'm running in the yard. I'm running. So I'll get up 6 a.m. It's cold. I'm in the mountains. And the prison guards, they looking at me. I gain respect. They like, this guy, like, every day he's in the yard, in the mountains, in the cold, like it's rocky or something, right? I'm just out here. I'm like, because you know what it was? Some, like, I'm seeing through time. I knew that I said, I got something to prove when I get home and how I'm going to do that. And I couldn't do it by myself. I knew I was going to need God. And so I didn't do it by myself. And so I guess I never knew that. That's when it started clicking with me, like, what my purpose really was and where I was going to be driven to. And I guess it was that moment in time that when I was seeing through time, I'm like, okay, I know my life doesn't end here. You know, I'm going to go build something when I get home. I'm going to prove everybody wrong. I'm going to prove myself right, that I'm going to be everything that I said I was. And so, like, I want to ask you, like, when did your personal relationship with God start? Was it like a certain incident? Was it just gradually? Was you brought up like this? Like, what was it that, so, you know, you got so connected with the Lord?
I love that question because my testimony is quite different, and I love yours. I have no doubt that you running in those mountains and the freezing cold was a mustard seed in one of those people's lives. Absolutely. And God, praise God for moving through you and hopefully moving others through your actions.
Thank you.
My testimony is different. I grew up, my parents fled persecution. Serbian nationalists, also known as Chetniks, attacked Bosniaks, which are Bosnian Muslims, simply for their religion. There were genocides, massacres, bodies still being found to this day, 30 years later. Being identified. It is heartbreaking. I grew up in a household where you learn the prayers in Arabic, but you don't understand what it means. And I grew up and denounced religion entirely because it felt like a show. It felt like a facade. I didn't want to stay identified with a faith that I didn't adhere to. I didn't pray 5 times a day. I was portrayed a religion that is judgmental and you will be punished if you do this or that. And that's not what I initially thought God would be. And it tainted my relationship with him for a while. Through my high school years, I claim I'm agnostic. Through college, I even go as far as to say I'm atheist. And then one night, I struggled with mental health immensely for a long time. And one night I was living in Florida at the beach, and the sun was setting. And these dark minds flood my thoughts as quickly as the darkness set in. And I just started thinking, I can't stop thinking. I can't stop thinking. Why can't I stop thinking? But then I shift my perspective and it's, well, I can't stop thinking. I have these thoughts. Why are they planted in me? Let's analyze them. Let's reflect. Let's grow as a person. And that's where maturity kind of started. I will not say I'm mature by any means. I'm 24. I'm naive as heck. You know, like, I still got a lot of growing to do, but that's where the seed was planted. And for a lack of better words, that's where God, I feel, put his hand on my shoulders and said, now is your time. And since then, I've studied all 3 major Abrahamic religions, we are way more similar than we are different. And that is the truth. True children of God love one another and meet each other with grace. And one quote I love is, you cannot point out a stain on someone else's shirt when you have one on your own.
Yes.
And entering the vicious environments and these vile work conversations and us versus them mentalities, you walk in as a child of God, whether that person is a different faith of you, and you are a living, breathing example of what you believe. Be that role model. Be that example. Who's going to carry the boats and the logs, right? You got to be what you want to be. And that goes back to wanting a village, too. Yes. You can't say, well, I want a village, and not be that villager for someone else. Your friend needs a ride to the airport? Drive them. Pick them up. Your friend needs some sugar? Go drop off some. You have plenty. That doesn't expire anytime soon. Make sacrifices. Our community has gone away from making sacrifices and saying, what's 30 seconds of my time for holding a door for these 10 people? What's this $10 going to do to me that I'm going to spend anyway when I can give it to a person on the street? Or better yet, buy them food, because in this area, who knows what they're going to do with that money? Be that good seed, like you were running those miles in the mountains in the winter. You don't know who that could impact. And it's right. Just living with grace. My relationship with God has strengthened over time, and I have a journal that I just write to Him, and I start off with Lord, and I just start talking, and I have a pastor I listen to, known from a church 1122. His name is Joby Martin. Great pastor. He is that Southern tell it to you straight kind of guy.
Yeah.
And he says this world is the upside down kingdom, and heaven, God's kingdom, is what we need. But we're in this upside down kingdom with evil, vicious, vile tongues, evil actions, inhumane things happening in this world. It is reality. We have to face it, but we need to do so with the idea and intention of God's waiting for me. I'm planning on this earth to do something good, and I'm going to go against the grain. You're taking risks. You're taking everything, but God does protect. So anything you think is a risk, God has a shield over you. Do it. Fight the good fight.
That's amazing. Thank you for that testimony. That's beautiful. Sincerely.
Appreciate it.
We speak about a lot, right? We see a lot. And one of the things, and so like I'm mixing a lot of different things in, because like I said, we are the name. We are Charlie Kirk, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you are a role model, you know, believe it or not, you are. People look up to you. You're young, you're 24, you know, beautiful young lady. People's like, all right, she's like amazing. Like, how do I get to that? And not to say that we're perfect. Nobody's perfect. But it's like we're living a certain life and we see certain things of, you know, what we're trying to get to. And it takes time. It doesn't just happen overnight. And so I want to ask you this, right? And because Charlie Kirk spoke a lot about the nuclear family, right? And so I want to ask you, and like you're 24. You said I'm young. You said I'm still learning, right? Mm-hmm. And you said like you still can be naive in certain areas at certain times. And so, as other young woman who's going to be watching this, and like, all right, how should I be seeing the board, or what does Selma think about this? So I want to ask you, we look in the country right now, we are at our lowest birth rates we've ever seen, well, in decades, right? Mm-hmm. Marriage is not the thing to be like whole culture is what they push nowadays, right? So amongst your girlfriends, like, how do you personally feel about this? And amongst like your team, like, do y'all guys talk about marriage? Is marriage still a goal?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. And don't get me wrong, I love to go out with my girls and dance to some music. I'm young. I love to stay active. Right. But the push for the nuclear family, I think, is going to happen more than ever after Charlie's passing. Okay. That's something he lived through. He was a child to two young children,
right.
A great father. And I personally, I do want kids. I believe that nowadays I want to encourage women to tap into your femininity. Don't girl boss too hard where you hate the color pink.
Right.
And that's like, it sounds like a joke, but it's true, right? Like
right.
You can find books online all the time saying, there's a title of a book, you know, this nice girl doesn't get a corner office or whatever as a title. And it's like, well,
wow,
cool. Do I want the corner office? You know, who's going to encourage my legacy when I'm gone? My employer that has over a million employees, or my two children that I want to raise in the future, or God willing more, right?
Yeah.
I want my legacy to be with my children. And it's sad. The field I want to go into, the legal field, I've had female partners tell me, you know, I've faced criticism for being a woman in law. I had kids and they wanted to hold me back. And they always made comments about that. Those comments, yes, absolutely wrong. So what if you want to have kids? That shouldn't be a reason why you can't be promoted for your work ethic. But also, why are we not enjoying these pauses? Why are we not sitting back and reflecting. And that's the problem with the left. I feel like we're trying to progress the society so much where we're not taking pauses and being like, whoa, America's done so much. Let's stop critiquing it and saying, well, we can improve this and that and see how much we've actually improved as a country. My parents as refugees weren't part of the Declaration of Independence, but that's the great thing about America. There's been a plethora of instances where events have happened, legislation has been passed, acts, ordinances, where everyone has been embraced and welcomed. And we got to reinstate some pauses and common sense and critical thinking of, okay, what is too much? What is too much overarching government hands and people's pockets and people's lives? What is this limitation on free speech? What is this redundant work that's pandering to voters? Just like the Delaware County Council does all the time, you know? I've called out Kevin Madden for saying, we need to talk about this more. It's cool. You talk about it. Do something about it. Why are you in an elected position? Schaefer saying the Human Relations Commission, that was originally an ordinance.
I saw that.
A disaster. They got served, and I believe at the most recent county council meeting, I forget by who, but one of my neighbors. So they changed it from an ordinance to a resolution, which in sense just means they support what the HRC does. It's redundant. We have the Pennsylvania HRC. We have the EEOC. What is this additional thing? Schaefer originally said that the reason why this was being initiated was because one of her constituents from the LGBTQ plus community felt they were under siege. For the most privileged people in this country, in one of the most privileged countries in the world, to say that they're under siege is disrespectful and laughing in my parents' faces, who faced snipers, who had to hide and run for their lives, who had bullet holes in their homes. Those people, my parents, my community was under siege. But because someone from the queer community doesn't like what they're told, or someone doesn't want to take their money, firstly, why do you want to give money to them anyway? Secondly, heaven forbid someone disagrees with you. This country is huge. Not everyone's going to like you. You're not going to like everyone. That is the cold, hard truth. And as Candace Owens says, life's tough. Get a helmet.
That was my line, right? I was like, yeah, Candace. And so, yes, everything that you just said just now, right? And thank you for giving that perspective on marriage and versus career, the career woman in the era that we're in right now. I think more women need, and men too, and I'll speak from the man's perspective, is because men are supposed to lead. Men are supposed to be pushing this. And if men were saying, listen, I'm not entertaining, like, this is what I want. I want a family. I want a wife. I want kids. I want somebody I can provide and protect for. And I can, you know, and so my thought process is I want women to have the option. Mm-hmm. Okay. I believe to get the best version out of women is they have options. So if you want to be the stay-at-home mother, you can be that. If you want to be the career woman today, you can do that, but you have options. Cause I feel that if it's not that when tough times come, we got single mothers out here who does wonderful jobs. Even women without, you know, if you're a college student and you're trying to find a way to work and pay for tuition and things like that. We got women out here, this superwoman, this Wonder Woman, that does wonderful things. But I felt like you're not tough times. You get the best out of men when men have to go through these tough times, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's what makes a man better, is when you are faced with obstacles. You know, can you be competent? Can you be sharp? Can you grow out of that? And so that's when you're getting the best version out of yourself. I like women to be soft. I don't want you to be stressed. So if you wanted to stay in the bed today, that's what you do. And I felt like men, and it's not necessarily whether they get hung up on the end result. I think it's just about the effort and the mentality of it. And we're in an era now, and I used to do a lot of man like relationship content. I don't do so much so more, like my thing is more so more purposeful, driven politically, I guess. But just to add a little bit of that in there, I know my old, they'll be like, oh my gosh, he's talking about some of that again, right? And so, but I just think it's important to hear somebody from a different background, a different demographic, touch on a little bit of that, right? What we titled the episode, A Voice for the Youth, Charlie Kirk was going around some of his thing, like most of us, he was talking to the youth. He was getting billions of views, a lot, every month, mm-hmm. every year. And so the evils, the puppet masters, the globalists, whoever we were talking about, right? They feared that. And so you said, like, I'm going to be that type of person. I'm going to talk to the youth. And because a lot of these boomers, they're lost. A lot of these people who are stuck in their ways, they're far gone. Mm-hmm. But if you can impact the youth, we've seen that Gen Z, they have statistics out that this generation, believe it or not, is going to Christianity. A lot of them had, they had Bible cell records that the Bible cells were going back up because of Gen Z. And I'm like, well, wow. And then you've seen so many turning point chapters started after Charlie Kirk's assassination. And so I want to ask you this. Why do you think the devil, right, attacks the youth and children so much? Why is that like an emphasis like on the youth?
I know there is evil in this world. That is without a doubt. Yeah. And they outright, anyone inflicted or infiltrated with this evil tends to relate to the children. School shootings.
Yeah.
You have gender ideology on children who are too young, and it's too complex of a topic for children to fully comprehend it. And you're telling them what to think. Charlie Kirk encouraged people how to think.
Right.
And I believe they attack children because it's, frankly, the easiest target. Children don't know any better. Ignorance is bliss, and children are ignorant. They don't know any better. You can ask my mother. I'd ask her the reason why after the 20th time she answered. I need to know everything about anything. I don't know anything, and children don't know anything. And that's okay. We can't expect children to speak for themselves entirely when they're out of a mind that are 7 and they like Hannah Montana or playing with dolls. You want me to explain mortgages or taxes to a 7-year-old? No. So why are we explaining complex gender ideologies to them? Why are we expecting them to understand and firstly accept everything? They're going to question it, and rightfully so. There's an idea of childlike wonder that children have and children of God have, and it's this childlike faith. And the wonder should come with ridicule to this upside down kingdom, to this world, and say, why is it like this? Why is it like that? Why are these people acting like this? And how can I be a disciple? How can I be a megaphone for God and stop this from happening? And the reason why they attack children is because once you break apart that nuclear family, it's easier to infiltrate and have Americans resent one another. If children already hate their parents and say, well, you're too conservative, you're too modest, you don't let me do this and that. I thought that with my mother. She didn't let me go out and hang out with just anybody when I saw my friends doing it. Right. For good reason, though. She should know who you're hanging out with and what you're doing, whose parents are whose and everything. But as a child, you don't think that. You think, I want freedom. I'm independent. I know everything. No, you don't. Sit down, read a book, and stay grounded for a little bit. You deserve it. And that's the problem with today's society is we're giving too much power to the system that's supposed to just teach our children how to do things and say, this is how you should be doing things. Not, here's this approach. Let's think about it like this. Rather, actually, here's this problem. Here's the solution. We're all Americans. We have the same goal in mind, just different means of getting there. But the education system is infiltrating their thoughts and telling them, here's the means on how to get there. We shouldn't do that. We shouldn't interject where free thought is, especially children. There's prodigies among us. I have no doubt that America has some of the most intelligent children in the world. Let them freely think. Don't make them think certain things just because you believe them.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing that. We got a few minutes left, right? And so I want to get your opinion on something that happened maybe a month or two ago, but it was going viral. And it was Sydney Sweeney with the American Eagle ads. And when people watch this interview, they'll look at you and they'll see her or you and her, vice, you know, however you want to put it. And so how did you feel about that? Like, could you relate to what you were seeing online? How did you feel about the hate from the radical left, the things they were saying? Because it's like it's an attack. If you are healthy, if you take care of yourself, if you're beautiful, if you're a white woman, it's like that, or even a white man, it's like that is the enemy now to the radical left. It's like they, so how did you feel about that, seeing all of that online?
This is my soapbox, and I could sit here all day. I think the left needed to learn what a nuance was after that commercial aired. Sex sells. Sydney Sweeney is known for her sex appeal. Just because she's a white woman and she mentioned her jeans being good, which implied her American Eagle jeans, doesn't have anything to do with her and her having blue eyes and fair skin. It's a coincidence. Heaven forbid they exist. I think they're reading too much into it, because when you have and instill this victim ideology into people, they're going to find anything and say, well, how is this against a certain group? And that's how they see it as. And it's trying to pin this implication that, because the writers of this commercial wrote it like this, Sydney Sweeney is a fascist, a Nazi, this or that. And it's, first of all, we're losing the gravity of words. We know what a fascist is anymore. And secondly, how? She's an actress getting her coin and selling herself and her body for American Eagle. She's doing a collaboration. let the girl get her coin. God forbid she's trying to get her bag, right?
Right.
And secondly, with the regards of seeing this strained connection between her being a Nazi and a fascist and a white supremacist, if that was anyone else of a different ethnicity, what would the left say? They wouldn't entertain it a second thought. And that's where I come in as someone who is a white woman. I like to say sometimes I'm an invisible minority. I'm a first generation American. My parents didn't learn English until I learned it. I learned English through Barney on TV. I learned it through a television with a purple dinosaur, the most obscure thing you can think of. But if I was on there, I'm afraid I'd be just like Sydney Sweeney, ridiculed for my thing. Meanwhile, my parents fled persecution for their religious beliefs. And it's this idea of identity politics and pandering. And let's think shallowly and let's push the shallow narrative of, well, I'm a victim because of my sex, gender. You could be a victim because of your race. And let's just view it like that. I'm a victim. Well, if we're not to judge others based on things they cannot change, why are we bringing them up in the first place? Where is meritocracy? Where is this or that? Heaven forbid white people are going to be media anymore because they'll be ridiculed for just showing up on TV screens.
Right. Thank you so much for sharing that. It's like these, they never hear it unless, you know, until like they see people on platforms speaking about it like yourself. And so hopefully that changes hearts and minds. We'll
hope so.
And so we have about 2 minutes left, right? And so I want to give you this opportunity right now. Like I said, when I spoke to you the other night at the town hall, like I saw so much passion in you. And so I want to ask you this, right? When your political involvement, when it's all said and done, and the things that you leave here on this earth, you know, when people are speaking about Selma, you know, when your time... How do you want your legacy to be? Like, what do you see yourself as? Like, what do you want to leave in this world? What are your goals? And like, how do you want it to be when it's all said and done?
I've thought about this for so long.
Yeah.
Now, I would say first and foremost, my legacy will be my children and their character. They will be a testament to my ability to raise children and teach understanding and empathy. And I hope that they can continue the message and the fight that I'm fighting. And that's just for humanity and discourse and having these tough conversations. Now, career-wise, I've said this even when I was a liberal. My name's already down in history. Selma, Alabama, where the Civil Rights March started, I'm fully aware. And I said, well, my name's already in history books, but I'm going to take ownership of it one day. And I want to go down in history. Now, what that may be, I don't know. I'm 24. I'm trying to figure out what my passion project should be. I love and care about so much. I wear my heart on my sleeve. But I will go down in history for something good. And I want to lead a great cause. And I want to make a change. What that is, I don't know. But I hope at least I can influence enough people to leave that legacy.
That's fire. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Guys, we're going to have Selma back. I promise you this would not be her last episode. I promise you that. Okay. So, guys, this is What You Scared to Say podcast, episode 38. What I need you guys to do before you click off is hit the like button, subscribe, and share. We will be back. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.